Hello, welcome to North Valley Church's Sermon Podcast. We are in a series titled Finding Messiah. If you are interested in North Valley Church or our Sermon Podcast, you can find us on our website, nvcmd.org.
Moment. There I am. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Excellent. Hope you're all well. Hope you're enjoying my voice, because you're going to hear it for a little while longer. Well, so as I was preparing for our message today, I spent a little bit of time just kind of reflecting on my own personal growth in history of becoming an adult. And I recognized that through that time, I kind of like had to figure a lot of weird things out for the first time. And so I was thinking about, like, you know, when you got your first vehicle. I'm sure some of you guys can roll back into mind when you got your first vehicle. Some of you aren't quite there yet, but you'll get there. And you got your first vehicle and you're out like cruising down the road and you blow the first tire ever on your first ever vehicle. And like you pull over to the side of the road and there's like that sheer like moment of panic, like what on earth just happened to my vehicle? And so you get out, and you're, like, panicking, and you're like, okay, I think somebody at one point pointed out in my lifetime that there's a place where there's a hidden secret tire on this car and a certain type of thing that I can get it off with, and so you're scrambling everywhere. And then on occasion, you get lucky, and some random person shows up, and they're like, you're in full crisis mode. Like, there is a problem to be solved here. I will take any help I get. And so you get like this guy and you're like, clearly that guy looks like he knows what he's doing, right? And he shows up and he like looks at your stuff and he's like, oh, hold on one second, buddy. Like, you're going to need this over here and you're going to need this over here. And then you just take those off and then you just put this thing on and then you just tighten those back up real nice and tight. And you're like, oh, I will take anything this guy has to say because he clearly is knows generally what he's doing. So now I'm confident in his ability to be able to resolve this problem. So you're kind of like, okay, dude, I'm in. Whatever you've got, right? So we had crisis mode. We had like confidence mode. And then you get into this part where you're like, you get the tire back on. Everything's kind of snug. And you let the car back down. And the tire stays. And you're like, okay, it's been confirmed. This random dude half knows what he's doing with his life. Hey, dude, what's your name? Oh, my name's Randy. I own a shop down the road. I work on cars. And then you get into this like, oh, okay, now I'm going to share it with the world. Like now it's not just, you know, okay, this guy doesn't half know what's going, but there's like this contagiousness to it. It's like, I'm so excited that this guy resolved my crisis and we figured this out that I'm going to share it. I'm going to go, hey, guys, Randy's shop down the road, he can change a tire. He knows his stuff, right? Now, take that same scenario and roll it back a little bit. And like, you know, you get in crisis mode, guy shows up, you know, Randy shows up and this dude's like, hey, I got no worries. I've seen this done on NASCAR before. And you're like, I don't care. I'll take any help I can get because I have no idea what I'm doing. And I'm freaking out right now. And my car tire popped, whatever. And the guy like, you know, starts going through. Then you're like, okay, he sounds like he generally knows what he's doing. But then he like reaches in your car and he pulls out a coffee cup. And he's like, don't worry. You take this and the tire comes off with this thing. Like confidence goes right out the window, right? You're like, this guy has no idea what he's talking about. And I'm going to smile and nod and tell him that I'll call AAA. Thanks. Or anybody else, or just about anything, because the confidence isn't there, right? So you kind of toss it aside. Okay, take that same scenario, roll it into your first house, or your first rental, or your first place of living, and you got like a hot water heater that goes up, right? Hot water heater goes out, you're like out of nowhere, it's like rushing water sounds wherever that is in your basement, or maybe it's in like a condo in a closet. It's like the sound of rushing water in your house, and it's just sheer panic mode. Like, oh my goodness, I'm going to go scream on the street, and the next guy that shows up that can help me figure out how to make the stop, I'm going to take it, right? Anybody that can help, please. I've got a problem. There's water rushing through my house. And so you get lucky. Your neighbor next door is like some 80-year-old dude, and he's like, hey, I've been doing this for a million years. Guys, you just got to find this, turn it off, right? So crisis goes into like some competency, right? The guy gives you some confidence. You're like, okay, we can resolve this. This can be handled. So you move on. You allow him to continue, right? He confirms that he's able to shut the water off. Okay, all right, buddy. Now you just got to call somebody who knows how to work on these things. Don't YouTube it and try it yourself. Just call somebody. Okay, yeah. Okay, gotcha. Thanks, Mr. Neighbor Guy, right? And so there's like this, and you can put that same, those are just a couple that rolled through my brain and my own experiences, but you can put that same kind of process in place in a lot of places as you do things for the first time, and even you've experienced things for the first time. You get landed with this crisis, you will take any help necessary to resolve it, right? The help arrives, they show that they're capable of being able to provide some kind of support, and guess what? Because we're in crisis, we will take it. I'll take any support you've got, right? And so you're confident in their ability to provide support to you. And then they confirm that they're capable of pulling it off. And then what do we do a lot of times? We're prone to share. Absolutely. Like, hey, you would not believe. Like, I've got this neighbor, and they resolved it for me. It was the coolest thing, right? I was stuck on the side of the road. They bailed me out. It was the coolest thing. I was sick. I had a cut. I had a whatever. I broke my leg. All those things. Like, there was people that were capable, and I was in crisis, but if somebody came, showed their ability to be able to resolve this, it was confirmed, and I'm sharing it, and I'm excited. And so it's kind of cool because, you know, I just thought that was a neat understanding, and we're just going to move on to the Bible and not talk anything about that because it's not related at all, right? And no, you guys are all like, oh, okay, Grant, I see where you're going already. Check, message done. Terry Halley's thing of like, let's get the ending and the beginning closer together. We're doing communion today, so I'm just kidding. No, we're going to talk some more. So that's kind of what we're talking about today. The past couple weeks, we had kind of taken a break from the John series we've been on. Last week was missions. The week before that was just kind of a one-off message. But the week before that, so if you roll back 3 weeks, we were in the book of John. We were in chapter 4, and it was a really smart, educated, beautiful, gorgeous-looking guy up here talking about the Samaritan woman. Anybody remember anything like that? No? You can nod. It's okay. Maddie's nodding. Thanks, Maddie. I was here, right? And we were talking about the Samaritan woman. So we kind of spent some time with the woman at the well. We spent some time talking about why Jesus was moving in that direction, what was so weird about what occurred, what happened. And then we even spent a little bit of time at the very end of my message talking about like what happened after the miracle at the well. Today, we're picking up, we're still in chapter 4. We're actually closing out chapter 4 today. And we're talking about the second sign. Now, it's not like the second sign, like this is the second miracle Jesus did, because at this point, if you watch The Chosen, at this point, he's done all kinds of cool stuff, right? But this was actually a returning trip. This was a second trip to a similar location, and it was the second sign, because the first sign was this first miracle performed in semi-private, semi-public, at a wedding banquet. And so what we're going to kind of walk through is there's some interesting things as Jesus returns to where the wedding banquet was, where his mother had asked him to help, hey, can you help us out? Like, we're a bit thirsty, and we kind of don't want to look like a bunch of dum-dums, so could you bail somebody out? And he's kind of like, it's not quite the time for this, but okay. And he does it, right, and throws a pretty sweet party, and they have a good time. And so we're kind of picking back up there. And what we're going to kind of poke through here a little bit is I want you to watch and keep an eye. I'm going to help show you, obviously, but keep a close eye on that same process that we just kind of established with where we kind of mold through crisis. Keep an eye, a watchful eye out for that, because what we're going to see is we are going to see someone in need. Somebody in need, they will do whatever it takes. It doesn't matter. They just need something resolved. And so they just throw out a line. The furthest, whatever, we're just going for whatever I can. It's a Hail Mary. And they're in crisis, and they take that step. And it's really cool how things kind of unfold from there. And so just to kind of give a little bit of background into where we're at and what's going on, like I said, so Jesus was traveling from Sychar, which was where he had met the woman at the well. Next slide, Curdy. He was traveling from Judah to Galilee. So Jesus was leaving the lower tribes to try the lower segment, if you want to call it that, to travel north. He was traveling through the Samaria, which Samaria was well known for a place that Jewish people don't go, because that's the people you don't talk to. Those are the people that we stay far away from, and we don't intermingle with. And then if you look at the north and the south. You just kind of think of that like there's this tension. This tension. Israel was gathered, Israel was separated, and now there's this tension between the kings that rule the north and rule the southern, and they're constantly at each other. I mean, it's just a sad place. So Jesus is traveling, obviously takes a path. You can read through or listen back on our podcast from the message three messages ago, if you want to hear the trip through Sychar and Samaria a little bit. But Jesus is kind of traveling north, so he continues his travel that way, and he's going to a place called Cana, or Cana, depending on who would, how you look it up. I'm not good at pronouncing words, but we're just going to go with whatever I say. It's Cana, or is it Cana? I don't know. We'll use them interchangeably. So he's traveling to an area where he's been before. This is the first time Jesus has circled back into a similar community that he'd already been. At this time, Jesus is performing miracles. The disciples are obviously becoming more and more aware of what's going on, right? But there's also the Jewish leaders are becoming more and more aware of what's going on. The surrounding people, whether it's the Jews or the Gentiles, they're all becoming more and more aware of this guy named Jesus who's out there doing wild things. Like he's saving people and changing things, and he's flipping things upside down. And so there's good things. There's an awareness of Jesus being out there. That's great. I mean, people are excited. People are hearing about him. People are traveling and following him and the disciples and the group that he's with. But there's also the swing opposite side of that where he was kind of dancing on Jewish leader territory. So the religious leaders at the time are kind of looking at him like, dude, I don't know who you think you are. I don't know what you think you're doing, but it ain't okay, and we're not okay with it, and God wouldn't be okay with it, so get out of here. And so they were starting to get to some pretty tight tension through this period as Jesus was traveling and doing things that were kind of against the Jewish tradition, against the Jewish law. So he's kind of traveling north. You can see with the arrow, he's traveling back to Cana. So we're going to pick up on verse 43. This is John chapter 4, verse 43, and we're just going to kind of start there. It says, after the two days he left for Galilee. Now we're talking 2 days in Sychar or Samaria after being with the woman at the well. Now Jesus himself had pointed out that a prophet has no honor in his own country. When he arrived in Galilee, the Galatians welcomed him. They had seen all that they had done in Jerusalem at the Passover festival, for they had also been there. So this kind of is an interesting, like the first couple of verses, is just a nice lead-in. So it's kind of given us an idea of like, okay, Jesus hung out in Samaria for 2 days. But after that time, he left. And in his leaving, he pointed out that not even a prophet has honor in his own country. So Jesus is recognizing there's some tension. He's recognizing that there's some struggle, that even the people who foresee the future, even the prophets of the time, they were having a hard time in this area. They were having a hard time with the community because they weren't even seen with honor. So Jesus is recognizing, like, yeah, there's some tension going on here. When he arrived in Galilee, the Galatians welcomed him. So they opened up open arms. They're like, whoo, the guy we've been hearing about. Like, this is exciting, right? Open arms, because they had seen. It wasn't just a word of travel, but a lot of them had been in a Passover festival, and they had witnessed what had been happening there. So you can kind of see there's that tension that I was already just talking about. But there's that tension occurring that Jesus recognizes that there isn't honor for him. There isn't honor for the prophets. Like, there's some tension in the beautiful things that were going on. But also, at the same time, the Galatians were welcoming him. They were saying, oh man, this is awesome. We're excited. We saw what you did. We are so glad you're here, right? Picking up in verse 46, we find our crisis. Once more, he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water into wine. And there was a certain royal official whose son lay sick, Capernaum. When this man had heard Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son, who was close to death. Okay, so this is our first picture of the return and the crisis. I added a map because there was another piece of this that I've always kind of skipped over. I just kind of take it as like the guy met him halfway. He was just walking out of the close city where Jesus was heading, and the guy just kind of short tripped out, caught him outside the gates, and was like, hey, I need your help, right? But it kind of, when you look at this geographically, right? Is that the right word? Right. When you look at this, it kind of adds another level of just pointing out the crisis that this guy had. pointing out the struggle that this Roman official had. Not only was he going to Jesus, the guy who's pretty questionable at that time, depending on who you're talking with, not only was he going to a traveling speaker, which was interesting for a Roman official, but he was going to a place not anywhere close to his home. The next slide, Curdy, has a couple maps on it too. So, okay, so the map on the left just shows his direction of travel. The two circles on the map on the right are Cana, where Jesus is headed, and Capernaum, which is where the Roman official's son was. There's about 20 miles of distance between them, a pretty like rugged mountainous territory. So it's not like a 20-mile straight walk. Like, hiking 20 miles, that's not so bad. No, we're talking like mountains, some pretty, you know, significant ground coverage. That's not an easy straight path of a walk. So personally, when I read those verses, I'm thinking, you're like, okay, guy just kind of catches him outside the gate. Simple. Well, it's not that simple. See, the Roman official had traveled far from where his kid was to intercept Jesus, who was heading to another town. So this is crisis. This is crisis on a big level, right? This is a big jump, a big leap of faith. This guy is going after whatever he can get to get relief because his kid is sick. And I know, like a lot of you parents, you can get there, like you've been there before, or you could be there. You can understand how that works. Of like, man, you're like, I would jump through any hoop. I would give him any magic, whatever, just about anything to relieve the pain of a poor little guy or a little girl who's struggling in some format. And that's where this Roman official was. I mean, he was willing to walk 20 plus miles away from his home to intercept a traveling salesman-ish, is how they were seen by the Jewish leaders, right? To intercept Jesus, who he had heard he was doing miracles. That's a huge leap of faith, a huge step in trust to be able to just take whatever he is available. I've heard good things. I'm going to go catch this guy and see if he'll come and heal my kid because I just need my kid taken care of. So it was definitely a crisis-driven faith. He had a huge need. He needed some results, and he was willing to take and do whatever necessary, I'm sure would be not accepted well by his peers, right, in order to get relief for his son. Verse 48 picks up. It says, "Unless this is Jesus with a little bit of a poke back. Unless you people see signs and wonders," Jesus told him, "you'll never believe." The royal official said, "Sir, come down before my child dies." "Go," Jesus said, "your son will live." The man took Jesus at his word and departed. A hard thing to do when you're in crisis. Especially when you're over 20 miles from your home where your kid is sick and you're intercepting a walking guy who's been known to do miracles and solve things. You're kind of going out on a limb. You catch up with the guy. You bring it up, "Dude, could you just come back to my house and help? I know you could do it," right? That's a big step of faith in itself. But you can see he's willing. He's like, "Hey, I'm coming. Like, I'm here." Jesus is like, "Hey, like, dude, you guys..." Meaning the people of that time are like, "You guys, unless you see these signs and wonders, you'll never believe." But this guy had a different level of faith. He traveled ahead of time. He knew that he had a crisis and needed some resolution. He was willing to take a step way out on a limb. And Jesus' response, "Go, your son will live." Do you think the guy panicked a little bit? Like, what on earth? Like, if I put myself in the shoes of this Roman official and this guy that I just traveled, you know, a far distance to catch, in order to get, just provide some sort of helpful relief, hopefully, to my kid who's dying way back at home. And the guy just said, "Just go back home. Your kid will live. No big deal." Would it be easy for me to turn around? I'd be fighting it. It'd be a struggle. Like, okay, I've heard good things about you. I'm gonna, I guess. But the Roman official had that confident faith. See, he was in crisis, he was in need, so he traveled the distance and did what he had to in order to get a talk with Jesus. And then when Jesus told him, "Just go home, your son will live," he turned around and he went back. He didn't ask any questions, that was the end. That's like the end of the discussion between him and Jesus. Like, there was no follow-ups. There was no like, dude, are you telling me that my kid will be okay like now? Or are you telling me like by the time I get back he'll be okay? Or are you just saying like you think he's going to live? Like, there was no questions. There was no holdbacks. He just went. He went. He took a big leap to go meet Jesus. He took a big leap to just turn around and walk home. And he did. And man looked, took Jesus at his word, and he departed. A confident faith. Picking up in verse 51, it says, when he was still on his way, his servants met him with the news that his boy was living. When he inquired the time when his son had got better, they said to him, yesterday at 1 in the afternoon, the fever left him. So the Roman, who's already out on a limb, who already walked a long distance, who then took that confident faith that Jesus said, hey, just go, and he turned around and walked back as he's returning, which reading some different commentaries and some like Bible explanation, the book things that PD fills me up with on occasion, they point to time frames. Like, you know, evening travel, he wouldn't travel overnight, so we're actually talking like it was probably the next day when he's traveling back. And so there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a time that passes, a significant amount of time that passes between him leaving, him intercepting Jesus, Jesus telling him to go back, your son will leave or live, him turning around and him heading back home. There's a good bit of time before he catches up with this guy. And the servant, while he was still trying to return home, the servant, being excited about what was going on, turned and started trying to go backwards to catch the Roman official who should be meeting with Jesus or bringing Jesus back, and he catches the Roman official on return. And on the return, the report is, hey, your son's alive. And the Roman official's like, wow, that's cool. Like, what time was it? Like, when was it? Again, putting Grant into this, I'd be like, what? My kid's alive? Sweet. Moving on with the world, right? Problem solved. Do I give Jesus credit or not? I don't know, but the crisis is resolved. I'm pumped. I'm going to move on. But the Roman official asked questions. The Roman official's like, whoa, time out. When? What time? What roundabout what time that happened? And he's like, oh, it happened yesterday. The fever left him at like 1 in the afternoon, right? It was taken care of. It just went away, 1 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday. Now, the Roman official is obviously a smart dude and much more in control of his thoughts and emotions than I would be. But he's thinking through this. He's going, okay, time out. I went all the way over there. I intercepted this guy. This guy just told me to just go back. All right, fine. I'll go back, right? I went back, and now he's telling me that this was handled right about the same time, that Jesus told me to go and my son would live. So he's confirming all of the stuff ahead that he went out on a limb to do. It was confirmed. He checked. He went back and said, hey, hold on. Let me ask a couple questions just so I understand this right. So the Roman official who was in crisis, got an answer, was confident in the answer, went back, and it was confirmed. Not just confirmed in his own head, but it was confirmed verbally with that servant and the one that was around him. Picking up in verse 53, it says, then the father realized it was the exact time which Jesus had said to him, your son will live. So he and his whole household believed. This is the second sign Jesus performed after coming from Judea to Galilee. See, the last piece of that wasn't that he took it, said, yes, thank goodness, like this is great, like awesome, my kid's alive, I'm going to go home and we're going to have a good time with my kid. He asked questions, and he didn't just ask questions, he shared it. It wasn't just him, it was him and his whole household that believed. See, the Roman official was out on a limb twice, long travels a distance because of a sick kid, was confirmed, came back, talked to the servant, went back home and shared what he had met, which shared what had happened, to the point that he had to explain who Jesus was, or at least who Jesus was claiming he was, which he is. He had to explain what had happened. And it wasn't just him that believed. It was his whole family. It was his whole household who believed. And it's really cool. And again, this is where it led me to this interesting like process of stepping out on a limb and your faith growing. The next slide, I kind of just put them in a nice little, I work in pictures, sorry. But I put it in just like a little pretty flow chart. But what had happened for this Roman official is that he had a crisis. He had a problem. We're all filled and surrounded by problems on the daily. Today, in a world that we live in that's just chaos, stuff on the news, stuff at home, stuff outside, stuff inside, you name it, everywhere, all over the place, all kinds of words, all different directions, 99% of them in the opposite of what Jesus would tell us to do, right? There's always crisis, a world of hurt and pain and struggle. And the Roman official took the crisis to Jesus. Took the crisis to a traveler. Took the crisis to a guy that at that time was still growing in his reputation. He went out on a limb. Today, when we have a crisis, we know Jesus is the Messiah. We know he did all these miracles. We know how his life started and what he said was coming. The Roman official didn't know all that. He only knew what had been done up to that point, which was still pretty early in Jesus' mission and Jesus' walk, his ministry. But the Roman official went out on that limb. Something I struggle to do today with all the knowledge. But he took that crisis faith. He took that first step. He put trust in the crisis and in Jesus, and he took that step. When he got there, Jesus told him to just go back. That was all he needed. He turned around and he went. Today, when I'm challenged with something and it's as simple as go and go back, I ask 1,000 questions, at least in my head, sometimes out loud, right? Wait a second, is this what you want me to do? Is this really it? Like, I really went here and to do this, and this is where I landed this? This is really the outcome? Are you sure this is what you want? It's not just a turn and go. There's a whole bunch of conditions that come from granting part in a part of all this. All the knowledge I know, everything we do, being aware of the Bible and of what Jesus did. And I struggle with that confidence step. But after the crisis, and trusting in Jesus in the crisis, and trusting in Jesus in the confidence of his answers and what he says, the trust grows. And on the other side, he takes a look back. He looks back, he asks questions. Wait a second, what time did that happen? What went on during that? Okay, that aligns with some stuff. Okay, wow, like that's a confirmed faith. I like to believe that at that point in your journey, in your walk with Christ, at that point when you're able to look back and see what God's done and recognize that, when you take a moment, take a deep breath and look back in your history, it just takes your step in your faith with Christ, your walk with Jesus, your walk in your relationship with God to a whole new level. Because you're able to go, huh, holy cow, that was all for me. That was all for me. But you don't get there without going out on a limb, without listening to what he says. And so that confirmed faith is a big, big piece. And then coming out of it, the Roman official, him and his entire household believed. Are we sharing it? What's that look like? What's that look like for you and I today? Are we going in a walk out on a limb? Are we walking confidently when we have a solution or we think God's given us an answer? Are we following the lead that he's put us in, the path that he's put us on? Are we checking back to make sure it's being confirmed? Are we checking back to make sure we're praising God for what he's done in our lives? And are we sharing it with others? Are we sharing it with others? So as we read through these verses today, it's funny, it feels like a pretty, I don't know, in my brain, it's like a pretty simple chapter in the book of John. It's like, okay, you know, guy's official son is healed, like, praise God. But there's something bigger happening at this time in Jesus' ministry. See, all the rest of the miracles that Jesus had been performing at this time were right there, hands-on, in public, in private, no matter what it was, Jesus was there. And so when you're standing or sitting before Jesus and he's like, hey, do you want to be better? Hey, did you know I know this about your whole life? Did you know that I offer living water? You're going to have a whole new life. What you've gone through is no more and your new life is better. When you're sitting or standing right there with Jesus and he's asking you those questions, it takes faith. It takes faith to make a move. It does. I'm not saying anything less of any of the rest of the people that were experiencing the miracles before this, but Jesus was present right there in the moment, healing, saving, right there, and they got to witness it. Cool thing, beautiful thing. And this, something changed. See, the dad, the Roman official, who probably shouldn't have been talking to Jesus, who traveled a really long distance, who went out on a way out on a limb, he had faith to be able to go to Jesus and then leave Jesus to see the power of Jesus' ministry, the power that Jesus has, the power of God in action. See, there was a different piece of this particular miracle. There was a different piece that wasn't in the others. This one was separated. This one required more faith and more trust than standing and being healed in the presence of Jesus. This one is more like how we work with today. Not identical. He still got to meet Jesus face to face, which is really cool. But Jesus showed him his power. Whether he's here or there, it doesn't matter. He can solve the problem just there. All he needs is for us to step out on a limb, for us to step out on a limb, for us to listen to what he tells us to do, for us to think about what has happened so that we continue to dwell in the beautiful and awesome things that God does for us day in and day out, regardless of all the junk that we live around, and then for us to share what we've done and what's going on and what had happened in order to help others to be able to step in the right direction when their crisis comes. So today, as we kind of wrap up, the sermon, and we transition a little bit, as we wrap up the sermon, I just want you to spend a few minutes. I want you to spend a few. You're actually going to get two songs of reflection today. We're going to do communion together, and we're just going to freeform-ish communion. I'm going to allow you to partake in communion in your time during these two songs. And we're going to do communion together at your own pace. Because what I want us to be doing today is to be reflecting. Yeah, spending some time in reflection, right? Because we live in a world of trouble. Our crisis is at our door all the time, right? People are sick, people are hurting. Direct correlation to our friend who is the Roman official, right? We are there. But also, we struggle with all the different things, seen and unseen, outside and inside. We struggle in our own heads. We struggle with our plans going forward with our families. We struggle with our plans going forward with our own lives. We struggle in our journey with the distractions, all of the chaos that's in our world. We struggle constantly. And see, the cool thing about this particular segment of verses, this particular miracle, the cool thing about it is that Jesus didn't have to physically be there, just like you and I. It took a step out. Are you willing to step out on a limb, reach out to God? Are you willing to bring it to his feet, to give it to him, whatever we're dealing with today? Are we willing to take the step out like the Roman official, to step away from all the rest of the people that are dragging in the path that we're going on in society, you know, to look like the outcast, to potentially and most likely be looked at as a person that doesn't meet everybody else's criteria? Are we willing to step out on that limb? And when God gives us the answer, maybe the one we're looking for, maybe not the one we're looking for, but when God gives us the answer, are we willing to turn and go back? Turn, not go back to the problem, but to go on with our lives. Turn and move forward. Are we willing to do that? And at that point, are we willing to look back and go, holy cow, look what God's doing in my life, and share it with other people? Because that's how our lives should be. That's how our lives. It would be a lot easier if Jesus was standing right here in front of you and I today for us to live a life like we know we should be living. But that's not how he wanted us to do. That's not how he wanted the love and the relationship between us and him to be. He wants us to be able to take it to him when it separates us, when we need to walk a long path. He wanted us to be able to bring it to him where he can show us and tell us what to do, but he expects us to be able to trust and walk forward regardless if he's standing in front of us or holding our hands and dragging us down the path. So today, during that time in these couple songs that we're about to do, you guys can come up, I want you to do two things. One, communion. Communion's nothing fancy, it's nothing crazy, it's nothing, the bread, which is amazing bread, by the way, made by one of our own finest lovely ladies who makes sweet breads. But the bread's nothing, thank you, nothing wild. It's not going to change into the body of Christ inside of you. The juice isn't going to change into the blood of Jesus inside of you. But what it's meant for us to do is to do it so that we remember together what Jesus did on the cross for us. Jesus spent some time with that group of guys as he knew what was coming, and they were still slightly unsure, right? As Jesus knew what was going on, he brought them together and said, hey, let's do this together. This is important. Let's do this together. And so at that time, he pulled up what he had. He had some bread, some wine. He brought it together, and he said, look, guys, when you guys get together, I want you to do this in remembrance of me. I want you to remember your walk with Jesus. I want you to remember the good times and the not great times. I want you to remember the miracles that he had performed, the impact on the people, how he had loved each and one of them, right? Where he was in the walk, whether it was easy or hard. And this morning, as we do communion, I want you guys to spend just a few minutes just thinking through, where in crisis have you gone to God? How was that response? What did you hear? How did you respond? Right? How did you look back? Have you looked back? Maybe it's a time to look back on all the things that God's done in your lives that you can be grateful for. And then we're going to spend some time in our communion just thinking about the next step forward. How do I better share my life, my walk, and what's going on with those that are around me that need it, the ones that are struggling with crisis and trying to deal with it on their own? All right, so I'm not going to pray, actually. We're just going to jump right into some music. So as we worship together on these last two songs, please, at your own leisure, feel free to walk up. Back there on the lovely table is what you need. And then you're welcome to find a spot in here or at a chair or whatever works for you to give yourself some space to just kind of remember.